when disaster strikes. Will you be ready?
Good evening, and we begin tonight with the monster hurricane and its deadly impact already.
When all hope is gone, will the government be there for you? If you're looking for ways to take your prepping to the next level, then you've come to the right place. Broadcasting from a secure and well-prepared location, it's time for Prepping 2.0. And now, please welcome authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Well, hello and welcome to Prepping 2.0. This episode, we're going to talk about the four types of prepper spouses or significant others and the blended family dilemma when the stuff hits the fan. And we're a blended family, of course, is if there's a divorce or something and, you know, some of your kids are with you and some of your spouse's kids are maybe at another location. It creates some really interesting issues about getting people going and rescuing them and those sorts of things. Before we do that, we should introduce ourselves. I am Glenn Tate. I wrote a 10-book prepper novel series called 299 Days. And like I say, 10 books, audiobooks, and all that. Been really well received. I think it's affected a lot of people. At least they reach out and tell me that, which is the most reward ever from doing this. It's fantastic to hear this. And then my wife, Shelby. Say hello, Shelby.
Hello, Glenn Tate. How are you?
Good. Why don't you tell folks about your books?
My books are, I have a 3-book series. The third book is to be released any moment now. We're in the final stages of making it pretty with the publisher, but the series is called A Great State. And so much of what we wrote about comes from our personal experience as preppers. So we're preppers, we're authors, and I want to just echo what you just said too. So much of what we do, and you and I are, I should say this too, are fresh off of just recently going to preparedness expos here in the Pacific Northwest, which is great because we get to meet people, we get to meet readers and listeners face to face. We get to meet some really young, cute ones too that are just googly-eyed because they're talking to you and I after they've just heard our voice on a podcast, which is interesting. But we hear the stories about this last one that we did in Prosser. A woman is crying and saying, "You have touched so many lives with how when a collapse happens, women will be victims if they do not prep now. You have hit the nerve." So,
and she was talking about your books. I want to make
books,
it clear,
exactly.
Yeah. And she was in tears, and that is amazing to have that kind of impact. And go to a library if you need to. And we're not trying to sell our books. We're saying the message is important. So please continue. Sorry.
So I want to echo what you were saying though. It's rewarding to meet people who you have an idea, you've put it into a book form, you go through all the effort to and hopefully get out a message and it's been received. And sometimes even messages that you may not have intended to are received and they hit people in really touching ways and it's really gratifying to meet them. So the reason we kind of bring this up is we're going to be kind of referencing our books a little bit today because a lot of the things we talk about in our books are because we wanted to get people thinking about things. So, that's who I am.
Yeah, and one of the things about this topic, about prepper spouses, and if you're talking about blended families, that involves a divorce, is that we've lived both those things. We've had prepper spouses who were, well, we're just going to say they were the type number four, the no way exclamation point spouses. That was their approach to our prepping. And we have a blended family. We have some of your kids. And my kids are elsewhere. And so we've thought about that or thought about this topic. That is our point. We've thought about it. We've lived it. We've come to some conclusions that you can take or leave. And by the way, even if you're not divorced and you don't have stepkids,
Bless you.
Yeah, good on you, by the way. I mean, good. I mean, you know, staying married is the goal, and we tried very, very hard. But the thing is that you may know people, you probably do know people who are in that situation, and prepper friends of yours, and this is maybe something that people in your mutual assistance group, your team, your extended family, whoever it may be, your prepper group, they have to confront these things. And unless you put some thought into it and have spent, you in our case, about 2 years thinking about this, you may not come to some of these conclusions right off the bat, and maybe hearing what other people have thought about it is helpful for you to at least consider. So this isn't just a show for divorced people and people with blended families. I think it's for
not at all
for every prepper. Plus, we're going to talk about more stuff than just that main topic that's up there. Speaking of other stuff, we have the top 100 list of things that disappear in a collapse. It's on our website, prepping2-0.com. By the way, go on to iTunes and Stitcher and Podbean and however you like listening to podcasts, maybe on YouTube.
And on regular radio.
And regular radio,
yes. This is awesome.
That's right. We're on a bunch of radio stations in the Western states. And if you're listening to us now in Utah, Oregon, or Idaho, howdy. Nice to be with you.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah,
and if you're listening going, oh, darn, I now need to go run an errand or something, you can catch up on all of – or if you're just now tuning in and you're digging us, go on to our website and listen to past episodes. We'd love it if you listened in.
Exactly. So tell us about item number 18 on this top 100 list, which comes from the Bosnia experience, where some folks there said, here, we went through this horrible thing, and we think a collapse in the United States is going to look somewhat like the Bosnian collapse. And they're the top 100 things to go first. What is item number 18?
Item number 18 seems really simple. All of these things, in one way or another, seem very simple, but it's buckets. Now, what I think is interesting, though, is buckets. You think of buckets, carrying water, carrying dirt, whatever, carrying something, primarily water. There's not a whole lot of things that I carry with water. But number 13 on the list was water containers. So I think it just goes to show water is very important in a collapse. Potable water, drinkable water, clean water, and the ability to store it, carry it, and it's very important. Here's what's cool right now. In pristine conditions, buckets are very easy to come by. We've all talked about this. If you talk to any prepper, they will tell you this. Go to your local store, grocery store, Costco, whatever, that has a bakery department that uses frosting. They come in those big white multi-gallon buckets that you can get gamma lids for, and then they become airtight. So this is the time to, and they will throw those buckets away. Yet to us, they can be very useful. You can make a big old stack of them in a store, tucked in the back of your garage or in a loft or something, and you've got something that could be very useful, if not life-saving, during a collapse.
That's right. And we have, you mentioned past episodes. You said folks can go onto our website, prepping2-0, and look at former past episodes. We have listener email, and this listener recently sent in this email about episode 15, which was 12 episodes ago. And I love it when people listen to episodes and send us emails. We love this kind of stuff. And this guy had some great things to say. So why don't you tell us about this email? From this listener.
Really great. So he references episode 15. So yes, if you go to the website and go back and listen, and that's where we kind of talked about just-in-time inventory that grocery stores, stores in general, places that supply us consumers with supplies. They do not keep a big warehouse out back. Have you ever noticed when you go, hey, do you have this in the back? 9 times out of 10, nope. What they have is what's on the shelves.
The shelves are it.
That's it. And so what happens is that they get a truck every day and they stock off the shelf. There's not the warehouse stockpile out back. That's just-in-time inventory, just enough to keep the shelves looking nice. So this is Jason, wink, wink. He uses a winking emoji. So Jason, not his real name, sent to me. Shelby, I just started listening to your show a few weeks ago. Unfortunately, I'm still stuck on prepping 1.0 because my family gets it but leaves everything up to me. Frowny face. Yeah, frowny face on that family. Hey, Jason, have them listen to this episode and let's see if we can help
you
out a little bit.
We're going to address that topic,
that
yes.
That very topic. So, I think it was episode 15 you briefly talked about just-in-time trucking. I think I can answer most of the questions you may have about this. I have been in the trucking industry for over 20 years and I currently work for a medical distributor. Most of my career has been doing runs where I'm home every day. Glenn was spot on and what he said. Okay, stop for a moment. Glenn, take a bow.
Yes.
You were right.
Oh, wow.
All right, there you go. Most grocery stores get a truck at least every other day. Some get one every day depending on how busy that store is and what they are getting. Hospitals are always expanding but haven't been to... I see this is where there's a typo. Hospitals are all expanding but haven't been to any that are expanding the storeroom. So what he's saying is Hospitals are expanding, but their storeroom isn't, is what I believe. I think there's a typo in there, but that's what I got out of that. Most hospitals are heavily dependent on getting a truck every day or every other day, depending on the size and location of the hospital. Okay, hospitals need life-saving supplies. And they're,
yes.
and they take it. What I'm hearing from that, they have a just-in-time inventory mentality, yet they have life-saving supplies. Okay, so let's keep going with that. I have been to small ones that only get a load two or three times a week, and I have been to others that get a load six or seven times a week. On major holidays and bad weather days, snowstorms, hurricanes, etc., they will stock up. But once again, after 3 or 4 days, they are expecting that truck. My companies do need to pay for warehouse space anymore when they can order whatever they need and get it within a few days. The same goes for most gas stations. They also get a truck every other day. The busy one near my house goes through 25K gallons of fuel per day, so they get several tankers every day.
Wow.
Another thing to add to this problem is the driver shortage, which is predicted to get worse in the next few years. And he gives a link addressing this very thing. If this doesn't turn around, it's going to take longer for people to get their goods and could drive the cost up. Oh, it's not just that. They're not going to be able to get their goods, period. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of non-preppers look at preppers and say, you guys, you got your crazy scenarios, you know? I mean, you all have these crazy scenarios, meteors and Ebola and crazy stuff that'll cause a lot of problems. No, we don't. We just heard perfect information about why something as simple as truckers not making their runs can mess things up, and hospitals don't have stuff, gas stations don't have gasoline, like within a matter of hours. And it would take very little for truckers to not be able to drive down the roads. Maybe the price of diesel's too high, and they've got a contract to deliver this for X dollars, and if they actually do it, they're going to lose a bunch of money. We saw this when diesel spiked up in 2009. Truckers were just sitting around. If they had some perishable stuff, then maybe they would. But if there was just, you know, a truckload of diapers going to Walmart, they would just sit there because they weren't going to do it. What if truckers are being shot at? What if the roads are obstructed with flood water or bad guys or something? The point is you can have a very little kind of low impact, boring sort of disruption or event that can prevent the trucks from rolling. And then when the trucks don't roll, now you're talking problems because there's no gasoline and no medical supply. So just-in-time inventory is a horrible thing. I understand why companies do it. They save a ton of money, but it's really short-sighted. And when the collapse happens and we come out on the other end of the collapse, we're all going to shake our heads. And just-in-time inventory is going to be one of those terms where people go, wow, why did people back in the early 2000s, why did they do that? That was dumb. But it's gonna bite us. And so I love that email from that listener.
Very much.
And good information. Yeah, really puts a human face on it.
Well, and it really does add to the top 100 things of list of things that disappear. Really, what's the simple things are what's going to disappear. And I want to just add to what you're saying. It's not going to take much. It doesn't take much for a truck not to run. All it takes is a mudslide. We've experienced those here in Washington State, where we live in the Pacific Northwest. Southern Oregon, there's a major mudslide that took out part of the 101. I guarantee you there's no trucks or anybody passing on there, and there's gas stations without gas. There's these local little mom and pop places that are without supplies. It's on a very local level, low impact, but just imagine if there's a bigger disaster. Think about forest fires, hurricanes, all of those things. What was it? There was a hurricane, there's many hurricanes, so I'm going to just muddle them all together in my mind. In Houston, that knocked out, the gas supply, and what happens, we see that right immediately after a natural disaster, suddenly there's no gas at the gas stations, and people can't escape. And suddenly we get into collapse conditions, and it's tragic a lot of times. So yeah, so awesome. Thank you to that reader for that great piece, and we love those kind of emails. My biggest suggestion on this: do not email Glenn. Glenn's mailbox fills up rapidly. If you want a response or you want to send in a letter like this, please send them to me, Shelby Gallagher 321@gmail.com.
And it worked.
It did.
Jason, the truck driver, sent one to you, and we're talking about it on the air, so that worked. You have something you would like to talk about, a new feature we're going to do. Take it away.
I'm excited about this because it's one of these things that's grown out of our books. We're going to call it the IMA moment. IMA stands for I Miss America moment. But we need to tell you what it means first. If you've read Glenn Tate's books, you know what this means. I Miss America is a message that came out of his books. There's a character that goes around and secretly spray paints on walls in yellow, kind of, I think we call it, you and I call it, Don't Tread on Me flag yellow. I Miss America around the city that the collapse was happening in, around Olympia, Washington. And it means what it's a conversation starter. I miss America. I miss America when I could walk around at night and not feel unsafe. I miss America when two political parties could actually get something done. I miss America when the Constitution was respected. I miss America when the flag was, you know, it's those it's moments like that. So we're going to have an I Miss America moment every week, and I'm excited about it because they come up a lot, and it seems like they come up a lot more than what they used to. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, Glenn.
Yeah, no. And so what we're going to do is, and Shelby's going to tell you about a moment we had this week where something happened, and we both said to ourselves and to each other, I miss America. It's an example. These I Miss America moments are examples of things that make us look back and miss America. So why don't you tell, this is an amazing story. Tell folks about this.
This is great. Hat tip and thank you to the guys over at This Week in Guns. I was on their podcast this week and this is a piece that they brought up and I said this very thing. This is one of those, as we're talking about this issue, I'm having an I Miss America moment, and Glenn Tate and I talk about that a lot. So this comes out of, I have the piece right here, out of South Hadley, Massachusetts. A police chief there was suspended for liking Trump. Oops, I just dropped something, but that's right. And NRA tweets. All he did was like tweets, and he's bullied into an apology to keep his job.
Do you mean like he hit like the little thumbs up button or the little like button? That's what it took to get what? Suspended?
Suspended and bullied. He was bullied into an apology to keep his job. So let me give you some details here. Mount Holyoke College, that right there should stop you right there. It's a college.
Liberal,
and a bunch of, you know, snowflakes that don't have very thick skin. And you'll see, and I'm not just saying that, I've read the article. So Mount Holyoke College and South College place police chief Daniel Hecht on administrative leave for liking tweets from the NRA and President Trump. The Massachusetts colleges place police chief Hecht on administrative leave before he had the chance even to start the job after students found his Twitter account. And they found his Twitter account, and then they started going back in the history. The career law enforcement official announced on his Twitter that he took the position for the joint campuses, saying how excited he was. I'm going to skip that tweet. When students found his Twitter, they became outraged and lost their collective mind that, I'm sorry, that was me, that Heck was an apparent Trump supporter and a member of the NRA. Students called his conservative beliefs, quote, red flags that should disqualify him from serving in law enforcement on the campuses. I'm not going to quote them because I don't want to give them any more airtime. Anyway, before coming to Mount Holyoke and Smith Colleges, Heck served as Xavier University as their director of public safety and chief of police. He has in the past also had a stellar career at Denison University. He knows college safety. That's what he's done.
But he's disqualified because he hit a like button on a Trump thing and an NRA thing.
Yep. But, oh, and that's where we're going to get. I'm skipping over his stellar history. On March 19th, Mount Holyoke College hosted a forum where students could ask the incoming police chief questions. The goal of the discussion was to alleviate students' concern about him. Heck was forced to humble himself to keep his job. He apologized to the panel for liking Trump's tweets, calling it a huge mistake. He also had to state to students that he did not support the president of the United States. He was bullied into saying, I don't like my president. Students also focused on his liking of tweets by the NRA. What offensive tweets did the NRA put out that he liked that they found so much outrage against? When the NRA tweeted Merry Christmas and he liked it?
Okay, Merry Christmas tweet. from the NRA liking that means you are disqualified from being a police officer or a police chief or something like that, despite a stellar career.
Exactly.
I miss America.
Exactly, exactly. Ignorant students appeared to lecture at Heck, instead of answering real questions. So this is it. So they don't like, they're upset at his liking of Trump's tweets and his support of our president. Folks, we support our president. That's it. That's America. Two, apparently saying Merry Christmas is offensive. So this, instead of asking him questions, here are the words that they assembled to question and to badger him. Yes, sir? Did you? All right. You seem to understand racism as a result of individual bad people, said one student. Racism is systemic. It is perpetuated by individuals, but it's not the result of individuals had... does not make sense what they said in response to... Anyway, the 30-year law enforcement officer implied that the students taught him about his bias. So this is, I'm going to say in as few seconds as possible, what he said to keep his job. I'm taking steps to address this bias. I didn't see it until people pointed it out, to be honest, but I take ownership of that, and that's one of the reasons why I've taken these posts down. He's eating crow to keep his job. I miss America.
Oh, my goodness. That is something well missed. Well, I miss America is a slogan, as Shelby mentioned, that's some of the book stuff. We have what we call the merch shack, the merchandise shack. We have T-shirts and hoodies and hoorags, which are these things you put over your face, especially if you're a motorcycle rider, and AR-15 magazines that say, I miss America. It's a great conversation starter. So let's take a look at what's in the merch shack.
What's in the merch shack?
Awesome. What's in the merch shack this week? Encourage people to go to either your website or my website, 299days.com, or A Great State. Click on shop. You will find the latest thing that we've added.
Yes, extremely cool. May I?
Excited. Go for it. You must.
It is AR-15 magazines that have the I Miss America slogan on them and the kind of the crying Statue of Liberty, and it says 299days.com on there. Really cool. We've been selling these. I mean, I'm ordering another couple hundred. I mean, they're out of control, flying off the shelves. And related to that, so that's what's in the merch shack this week, the new thing. Related to that is another new weekly feature we're going to do called Cool Spouse of the Week, right? That's pretty cool.
Hat tip to cool spouses. It's a great thing.
And you, my dear, are a cool spouse. Oh, by the way, we're married, in case anybody didn't know that. And so this comes to us. Kim in Indiana, for her husband Larry, got him an I Miss America AR-15 magazine, and he's going to love it, and she was really sweet about it, and she's so excited to get him this because she knows that he loves both of our book series, by the way, 299 Days, and then that got him started on A Great State, and she wanted to make him happy. So good on you, Kim. You, Kim, are the cool spouse of the week, which is a great segue when we come out of the break to talking about the four types of prepper spouses. Stay with us.
We'll be right back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate right after this.
Prepper Press is a small, independent publisher of survival nonfiction and post-apocalyptic fiction. At PrepperPress.com, you'll find a variety of books to guide you on your journey to prepare for a compromise to the electrical grid, natural disasters, economic collapse, political strife, or similar scenarios that could disrupt life as we know it. You'll also discover fictional yet believable stories about what happens to society when everything falls apart. To learn more, visit Prepper Press online at PrepperPress.com.
Hi everyone, Glenn Tate here.
And Shelby Gallagher here. People always ask us whether a particular property would be good for prepping.
Well, luckily there's someone who does this for a living, and that's Brian at Strategic Landscape Design. He's a bug out location consultant for a new property or the one you already have.
Strategic Landscape Design shows you how to make your property productive for you now and when the collapse comes. Visit strategiclandscapedesign.com and see all the things Brian can do for you and your property. That's strategiclandscapedesign.com.
PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Looking to meet other like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own prepper group? Already have a group? Join PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet has gathered the biggest names in the industry to help unite preppers everywhere. Join John Jacob Schmidt, Scott Hunt, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, Glenn Tate, Shelby Gallagher, Charlie Hogwood, Samuel Culper, Survivor Jane, Rick Austin, Franklin Horton, Ryan Mitchell, and Brian Duff. Our team is united. Check us out at PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. PrepperNet.com.
And we're back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Shelby Gallagher having a great conversation today about those types of spouses, partners in a collapse situation. Just to do a quick review, there's that spouse that's all in. They're planning, they're helping, they're joined beside you in your prepping. Then there's that spouse or partner who basically says, yes, that's something important to do. Go ahead and do it. They're supportive but not helpful. Then there's that partner who is tolerating it. Whatever, do what you want to do. I don't necessarily agree with it, but go ahead and do it. And then there's that partner that is vehemently against it, and they're very vocal about it. They're saying, no, you're crazy. No, heck no. So think about all of those different categories of spouses.
I am blessed to have an all-in spouse, and that being Shelby. By the way, one of the reasons people ask us about this topic is that if you've probably surmised this from this episode or other ones, we both were married to people who were very, very hostile to prepping. That wasn't the only thing going on, by the way, but I mean, that was one of them. And we know this thing. We know what it's like to live with an extremely reluctant, hostile, in my case, spouse. And so I know the difference. You know the difference. And so, yes, the all-in spouse. And I can just say from a man's perspective, there is nothing better than an all-in wife who is on the same page with you, and you're not constantly trying to tug this battleship in some other different direction. So I know that's not what the main point of this is, but I cannot say enough how amazing it is to be a man with a supportive and fully engaged, by the way. You're not just, Shelby doesn't just say, you know, yes, sir, all the time and nod her head like mindlessly. Fully engaged, fully informed, thoughtful partner in all of this. But anyway, so type number one is all in. Go ahead and tell us more about all in spouses.
All in spouses are, yeah, those where it's a partnership, you're on the same page, you're planning together. What are we going to do, for example, what are we going to do this year to get this aspect of our prepping going? What are we going to do? And it's very much, it's a partnership. The second person is that person who's like, yeah, okay, I see the need for prepping, go ahead and do it. They kind of tolerate it and are they okay with it, but they don't participate, they don't plan with you, they're not engaged, but they see the benefit of it and they let you do it.
And I see two subsets of the tolerates it spouse. One is tolerates it with a smile, which is great.
Which is wonderful,
and, which is wonderful. And the other one is tolerates it with, let's say, like a neutral sort of approach. And you're not getting, we'll get into this later, you're not getting the eye rolling. It's just like, okay. And
that's a good idea. Go for it. You can do that. Go ahead. That's great. And they're not participating.
Exactly.
That's the key.
You were just saying you go do that. It's like a singular thing. It's like you get permission to be a lone prepper, right? You get permission from your spouse to be the lone prepper. Better than some of the stuff we'll talk about in a moment, but still, you as the prepper are having to be the lone prepper. You are the only one doing it, and it not only is it good to have a spouse who's on the same page as you and supportive, there's a very practical side to this. It takes a fair amount of work to prep, especially if you're going to do it right. If you're the only one vacuum sealing food, you're the only one doing this and that, you're the only one, you know, becoming proficient in firearms, you're the only one going and getting a ham license and becoming proficient in communications, and you're the only one tending to the chickens and gardening and doing all these things, it's not only less fun, it's harder to do as just a number of hours in the day thing. And so that's not ideal. Here's the cool thing I've noticed about the tolerates at spouses is that since they are tolerant, their minds are open, and there's a decent chance of being able to very slowly, probably very slowly, win them over and get them to realize that this is not crazy and insane. And so you can end up going from a type 2 tolerates it spouse to a type 1 all in spouse. And that, of course, is the goal. You guys, and this is mostly guys, I think, that have this problem. Don't overplay your hand. Don't be like, hey, it's been a week, and so now let's go to the range and do this stuff. I mean, that's a whole different show about how to gently and slowly persuade a reluctant spouse or a tolerant spouse into becoming full on. But we were talking about this before the show. I think that you should be pretty doggone happy with a spouse who tolerates your prepping, even if it's a neutral tolerance. A smiling tolerance is even better. What do you think about all that?
I absolutely agree. If you have any one of those two that we've just kind of described, I think you are in a great place. You're in a great state. So
that was funny.
I know. There it is. There's the double entendre of that book series that I was trying to hit on. So I think you're doing pretty good. I mean, it's hard to agree on everything with the person that you've chosen to partner your life with. It's hard. So let's talk about the other two, though. So let's jump into number three. Number three is that person who really doesn't like prepping, but they're not. They're like, okay, whatever. And it's eye-rolling, and it's like, fine, if that's what you want, fine. They're certainly absolutely not going to help you. They're not going to partner with you. They are not going to tolerate. They're not going to tolerate, but they don't. But they're verbally intolerant. I would say it's mostly verbal. It's like, this, I don't agree with this, but fine.
And it's like they're frustrated, and they've given up, and they kind of think, well, you're going to do this anyway, so whatever. It's so funny, a word like whatever, which actually has very little meaning, actually has a ton of meaning, right? Dictionary meaning, there's not a lot of meaning to whatever, but when you say it, especially in that tone you were using,
and you grind your R, that's the key.
Yeah, and you delay it out. Whatever, kind of Valley Girl thing. And in my situation, it appeared on the surface for quite some time that it was the whatever eye-rolling stuff. It was really the absolute hostility, but we'll get into that in a moment. But one of the things that's really off-putting about being a prepper spouse or being a prepper and having the eye-rolling whatever is you really get the sense that your spouse is completely frustrated and has given up and has basically concluded there's no way to persuade this person about how stupid and wrong and crazy they are and how they're spending money and they're spending time and they're embarrassing me because they're, you know, talking about the end of the world. It's like they've surrendered, and that's not a relationship.
It's one of those, it's like, this is an issue in our marriage that we are going to agree to disagree on, kind of a thing. And I think you're actually getting a little bit into number four a little bit, because the number four spouse is that, no way, we're not doing it. We're not spending resources. We're not doing, no, it's not only just the whatevers and the kind of the verbal, it's no, you're not spending, no, the resources in this family will be used to, you know, buy the new car or whatever and used on other things,
fatten up the 401k. But you realize that 401k is going to go away when the trucks aren't rolling, all that stuff. And you're shut down. And I think, and this is horrible, by the way, because here's the thing. I've said this before and The more I think about it, the more true it is, at least in my mind. Prepping is such a hugely important topic. This is not a topic like bird watching. If I said, hey, I really want to go bird watch on Saturday afternoon, there's no reason to get upset. There's no reason to stamp your foot. There's no way to say no way. I mean, because it's just some little hobby. And when you are a prepper and you are doing all these things that take time, that take money, that take social you know, disgrace and scorn, at least, you know, where we used to live. I used to live in Olympia, the heart of darkness, Olympia, Washington. You used to live in Portland, another horrible place to be a prepper, when you're going to sacrifice all that stuff, you're going to do it for a big reason. The big reason is living. It's one of the few topics out there where the stakes are living or dying. It's not how you're going to spend a Saturday afternoon. It's living and dying. And when you were saying, and I'm getting animated about this, but when you were saying, we need to do some stuff, and if you want me to do it, I'll take it on by myself, but I need to be able to. I need to have permission to do some things to save our lives and save our kids' lives. When you're told no, it's pretty hard to take because it's a lot bigger deal than bird watching.
Right, absolutely. This is not just – prepping is not a hobby by any stretch because it's way too expensive it sucks up your time. It is something that – now, do you have fun prepping? Those of you who listen and are preppers, you know, yeah, actually you have a lot of fun. I love going to the range every now and then. I'm enjoying gardening. I'm enjoying all the things that I'm doing. But if I didn't have to do it, I'd find other things to do that were just more recreationally fun for sure. Now, let me add this too. So in your situation, I think you were definitely the 3 to 4. You were probably a cross between 3 and 4. She wasn't out and outright no. She was pretty darn close.
Towards the end, it was outright no.
Yeah, and now not right now. I was in the situation as more of a between, believe it or not, a 3 and a 2. But what it was I'm going to go do, I was doing all these things. Oh yeah, sure. Go ahead and do it. I don't understand why you're spending money on it. And I'm like, well, we live in a place that's unsafe. We live in a place where there's riots. We live in a place. Oh no, we don't. This is a safe place. It was the denial. It was kind of that ostrich sticking the head in the sand thing that, so there wasn't that argumentative side of it, that averse side of it. It was the sticking the head in the sand that was getting kind of crazy. So and because sticking head in the sand was the action, there was no why do we need to prep? There's nothing wrong. It was really normalcy bias and denial at its worst. So I'm throwing that out there. So if you are, let me say this. So as you're stopping and thinking about it, think about where you're at in your life. If you are with someone, and where are you at on that scale? And here's the thing. We meet people like you at our expos all the time. In fact, we were just talking about it. One of our previous hosts or guests on our show that co-hosted with us, Kaz. He's probably, his spouse is a number two. She likes it and she kind of lets me do it, but she doesn't help me out or anything. And he's like a major comms dude. He teaches everybody else how to get their comms up for a collapse situation. So this is not anything unusual. It's pretty common. So I want people to know that as we're talking. So let me throw this out there. We're making a huge assumption here that everyone's married. Are they?
Yeah, no. And we did mention prepper spouses or significant others. This obviously applies to like significant others, whatever that might be. I guess a long-term relationship or something like that. It's just kind of easier and quicker to say spouses, but you know, this is a problem if you've got, you know, a long-term boyfriend or girlfriend.
But it's also something to consider, I think, if you're dating.
Oh, big time.
Big time too. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, here's the weird thing, and Shelby, I don't date a lot because I'm married to you. But so I don't really understand. I mean, it's been like decades since I dated. But I could see this, if you're out there dating, and again, I'll describe this from the male perspective because it's the only one I understand. And that is, you know, you're going out and you're dating and let's say you're a prepper. Obviously, you're listening to this show. Of course, you're a prepper. And this prepping thing is a major part of your life. This is important. Again, it's life or death. How do you bring this up when you're dating? Because let's be honest, the vast majority of the general population thinks you're a lunatic, right? They think you're a lunatic.
Well, I maybe so, but I think more and more the word prepper is it doesn't have the lunacy unless you are living in the heart of Seattle or Portland or San Francisco or something. The prepping market is taking off. Doomsday prepper sorts of the shows are taking off. I mean, there is definitely people, I think people in general are prepping more. But that being said, that doesn't mean that a person in front of you says, hey, yeah, I'm into prepping. Yeah, they might be into just like, you know, getting a few handguns. That's not prepping. That's being that's having your self-defense ready, maybe, but it's not prepping, like in a very multi-layer, holistic point of view. So I think if you're dating, this is just my thoughts. Have a conversation. You know, I like being prepared. I like being prepared. I like being prepared if there's a natural disaster. I like being prepared if it's not a natural disaster. Just so you know, I keep food supplies. I keep water purification, something I do because I believe in taking care of myself. So I think you can start a conversation that way. May not be first date material. And I certainly don't think if you're looking for a date on, I don't know, Tinder, may not find a prepping type of person. I'm thinking you're going to need to date people that you meet at CERT classes and at gun shows and at, I don't know, first aid classes and comms classes.
Prepping expos, church, I think gun stores are big. PrepperNet.
Absolutely.
PrepperNet is great. It's this thing, PrepperNet.com. Go ahead, look it up, where preppers get together.
Well, they can link to it from our website, too.
That's right. That's right. And sort of get together. It's not a dating site. It's for preppers, and you say, okay, you know, there are seven people in my zip code. Do you want to reach out to those other ones? And then the computer sends you an inquiry or sends the other person an inquiry and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, that's the way to do it. But I think bring it up slowly, but definitely bring it up. You know, I think it would be tragic to finally, again, male perspective, meet that perfect, awesome woman. And then, oh, by the way, I'm a prepper. Oh, my God, you're a prepper. And then you just like, oh, dang. You know,
exactly.
And so it needs to be a thing. But I say this again, primarily to guys, if you can get a two, a tolerates it, even a neutral tolerates it, that's a great start. And you mentioned Kaz, and he mentioned that his wife is warming up and is getting there and is getting more integrated into the whole thing. So, yeah, that's a thing for dating. You know, it was funny. We were talking at the beginning of the show about we've been preppers a long time and we've written a bunch of books and we think about this and we talk to people and we listen to people all the time about this thing, so we kind of know what we're talking about. When it comes to dating, we don't have a clue about dating, so we're kind of bringing up the topic, but we are
not experts at
all. Any big answers on that at all.
So the next thing, though, and we have about 10 minutes or a little less than 10 minutes to talk about this, and this is what, and I think you just brought up a good point. We are bringing these things up because we believe this is something, and you and I have had long conversations about this in our personal situation. These are things you need to talk about and prepare for. If you have an ex-spouse and have a blended family, and you have stepkids or kids where you have shared custody sorts of situations. I bring this up in book one. I was praised
of a great state.
A great state, the divide. I was praised by a fellow doomsday dystopian, same person, the same genre, for bringing this up because it's something people need to talk about. What are you going to do? What is your plan? Let's just say kids are at your ex-spouse's house for the summer, and all of a sudden something happens and there's a collapse. Do you have a plan for communications with that ex-spouse? I'm hoping it's friendly enough that there is, and or plans for kind of swooping in and rescuing the kids. I mean, that's what could happen. And this is what I brought up in my book. And I, by no means do I answer that question. I believe every family situation, every arrangement with a former spouse is unique and of its own. But you need to plan for it.
Yeah, and here's the dilemma. Let's say, and we're going to, this isn't our situation, but it kind of tracks with the books. You are in Olympia, Washington, and your kids are in Portland, Oregon, about 2 hours away with no traffic, about 2 weeks away if there's a collapse, right? So if you don't, this is the dilemma, folks. If you don't go and get your kids quickly enough, you may not get them. But if you jump the gun, you've got a couple problems. Number one, there's probably like a custody court order, and you'll be breaking that. It could kind of sort of be considered kidnapping in some cases. Actually, it is if you don't have custody and you go grab the kids. And so if it's not really a full-on collapse or grid down situation and you jump the gun, you could go to prison. I mean, you know, or lose the kids or a variety of other things. So the dilemma, but that just means that you need to have a plan.
Just need a plan.
And you're right. The first thing is open communications. I think most people have an okay enough relationship with their ex-spouse that they can at least talk. I think what you were getting at is not, do I have that person's phone number? You were getting at, you know, have we talked about it, and there's some sort of acknowledgement that there might need to be a time when the prepared spouse needs to come and swoop in and grab the kids and take them back to the prepared place. That aside for a moment.
And you can say that as simply as, I'm happy to come in and get the kids to safety.
That's yep. What about the ex-spouse? Are you going to, you know, is that part of the deal? Are the kids and the ex-spouse a package deal? And so, and maybe you're okay with that. Probably one of the reasons you're not married anymore is that this ex-spouse is not a prepper. And are you just going to have the eye rolling, whatever, outright hostility walking into your bug out location? No supplies, a terrible attitude.
No skills.
And
they're going to
whine and complain.
Your supplies dry.
Exactly.
Yes.
And are you going to do that just to get your kids? Maybe. Or maybe, you know, in book one of 299 days, book two actually, one of the characters, Pow, who's a real guy, goes to the door and tries to get the kids from my then reluctant spouse. So you got to. We're not saying there's a solution, and we're certainly not saying go and kidnap people, but start thinking about this. It should take weeks or months or years to really think about this and formulate a plan. By the way, as that time's going on, those weeks, months, and years, maybe situations change. Maybe you have the kids more time. Maybe people move closer together. Maybe the relationship gets better with the ex-spouse. Maybe the ex-spouse gets married, and now that changes things. I mean, there are all kinds of things. So you got to start at least thinking about this. And please don't, folks, because I was there and Shelby was there at the very beginning when we started thinking about these things. Don't be utopian and just assume,
absolutely,
I'm going to zoom over to wherever and get the kids.
It's not going to be Hollywood. You're not going to be able to go flying in with your AR and looking all cool and looking all awesome and save somebody. Just the gridlock of traffic, just the absolute chaos of it, and the murderousness and the looting will be awful. Let me say this too. Let me throw this out there. This is where other relationships can come in handy. When I lived in Portland, had a friend who lived outside of Portland, but his son worked and lived in Portland. Son is, I would say, kind of a tolerates it, eye-rolling kind of a kid. He's a millennial. And my friend asked me, if things go bad in Portland and you decide it's time to leave, would you take my kid and grab him for me? And I said, and we prepared this. I said, if your kid can get to this place, this block, this location in Portland because it's an exit route for me, I got him. And so it's one of those things. If you can't be there, that's where the other relationships with the other preppers can come in handy. So it's one of those things, that sort of a thing where you can act, you can be a support to somebody else who's got kids nearby, that sort of thing. I've talked about it. Floyd, my father, my real dad, has a plan for bugging out and sharing locations. If he lives on the East Coast where there's hurricanes a lot. Hurricanes are heading towards him. He's got places he can go. If the hurricanes are heading towards another friend, they're coming to his place. And they plan these things out. And I think you brought up a good point. And we only have a couple minutes here. But this is kind of the whole undertow of my book series. In the first book, people get out that knew that it was time to get out. And they get the kid out with them. Book three is called The Rescue, to go rescue people who chose to stick around when they shouldn't have. And it's a great lesson in that. So I think this is a great topic to talk about. And there's I think that it's one of those things, though, too, we need to think outside of the creative boxes. Yes, you need to negotiate with your former spouse. I know you hate it when I use that word. But you also need to work these things out. The other thing, though, too, is at least have one thing. I've got the kid and we are safe. Have one way to at least get a message to that other spouse so that they are assured, because we don't want people worrying needlessly as well. Thoughts on, final thoughts for you, Glenn.
Yeah, exactly. Have a plan. I love the idea of the buddy system, somebody in the location that the kids are, who's trusted, who could go get the kids, talk about it in advance. Maybe you meet people on PrepperNet or something, and you got to really get to know them before you're just going to trust them with your kids. But that kind of thing, and that's the way to go. You know, you have time now before stuff's falling apart and crazy and cities are burning and people are getting shot. So do it now. So I think that was a fantastic note to end on. We are going to go now. If you're a Patreon supporter, patreon.com, you can support us, and then you get access to the after show, which is the part that's for Patreons only. And we're going to talk about Boy Scouts versus the Khmer Rouge, which will make sense. And we're also going to answer Patreon's questions. So if you're a Patreon, stick around. And Shelby, take us out.
Failing to prepare is preparing to fail. Thank you, Ben Franklin, for that great quote. Have a great week, everyone.
You've been listening to Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate. All of the fun and easy prepping information heard on this podcast can be found online at prepping2-0.com. You can also find out more about Glenn's books online at 299days.com and about Shelby's books online at agreatstate.com. Until next time, be smart, be safe, and be prepared.